Thank you very much. And tonight I have the high privilege and distinct honor of my own as the first president to begin the State of the Union message with these words. Madam Speaker.
President Bush last night delivering his sixth State of the Union address. And we will continue this hour in getting response to that address, response from our guest, a professor of political science, and reaction from many of our congressional delegation. Many congressmen and women will be joining us this hour, including Republican Tom Petri, Democrats Gwen Moore, Tammy Baldwin, Ron Kind, Steve Kagan, U.S. Senator Herb Kohl. All were invited, and those representatives agreed to be with us for a few minutes during this hour as we talk about what the president had to say last night during his State of the Union. We look for your response as well, your questions, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. It's about 11 minutes now past 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, January the 24th. I'm Joy Cardine, welcoming in Eric Davis, professor of political science at Middlebury College. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So what did you think? What was your overall reaction to what the president said last night?
Well, my sense of the speech is, with President Bush, you have a president now who's arguably in the worst political situation since any president since Jimmy Carter's last year. Recent polls show that Bush's approval is somewhere in the low 30% range. Approval of his policy in Iraq is even lower than that. More interestingly, a series of recent polls show that almost 70% of Americans now think the country is off on the wrong track. So the public really, I think, is no longer interested in what George Bush has to say, frankly, that the public's looking forward to the next presidential election. We have a Democratic majority in both House and Senate. They have their own proposals, the so-called 100 hours package that passed the House in the last few weeks. The Senate is working towards some sort of a symbolic resolution of disapproval on Iraq. So I think President Bush he had some interesting ideas in the speech last night in the domestic side, but I don't think there's going to be very much happening there, with one exception.
Right.
The one issue where I think he actually may be able to do something with the Democratic Congress is immigration. But on the other things he talked about, I think real policy and action is going to wait until the next president and the 111th Congress in 2 years.
Yeah, it's funny because one of the U.S. representatives from Wisconsin, Jim Sensenbrenner, was unable to join us this hour, but he did have this response. You know, he shared with the American public a slate of adventurous proposals and extended a hand to the new Democratic leadership in Congress. On the subject of illegal immigration, I was disappointed to hear talk about a guest worker program. So the president's going to have more opposition from his own party.
Right, yeah. Right. And Sensenbrenner was, when the Republicans controlled Congress, he, of course, was an important member on immigration policy. What happened in the Senate last year on immigration is that John McCain and Ted Kennedy got together and came up with a bipartisan proposal that seemed to have pretty good support in the Senate. And that proposal was pretty similar to what the president was proposing, a guest worker program and some sort of thing that would allow people who've been living in the United States for a number of years to get on the track to citizenship. So I think that if there's one area where the congressional Democrats and the administration may be able to cooperate in the next 2 years, it's an immigration bill.
Yeah. You don't think there's going to be any cooperation when it comes to ethanol or alternative energy?
Well, there may be a little bit, but I think certainly the Congress would vote for things to provide more biologically based fuels. But I think what Congress would really like to do there is perhaps a more significant improvement in some of the fuel economy measures and some more vigorous policies that would reduce U.S. dependence on foreign oil than the Bush administration be willing to support right now.
Let me ask you if you think Congress will support this part of the president's State of the Union address.
I've spoken with many of you in person. I respect you and the arguments you've made. We went into this largely united in our assumptions and in our convictions. And whatever you voted for, you did not vote for failure. Our country is pursuing a new strategy in Iraq, and I ask you to give it a chance to work. And I ask you to support our troops in the field and those on their way.
Will Congress give his new plan a chance, Professor Davis?
I think what will happen is that there'll be a resolution which will probably come out of the Senate first. It'll include some elements of a proposal that Joe Biden, Carl Levin, and Chuck Hagan have come up with. And then there's another group of senators, Warner of Virginia, Collins of Maine, and Nelson of Nebraska, that are working on a slightly different proposal. I think the language of those two proposals will be melded together in some way so that there will be a symbolic resolution of disapproval that the Senate would pass, and then that the House would probably pass. My sense then is that Congress may wait a few months before taking any more drastic action, either putting a cap on the number of troops or doing anything on the funding. But I think that the members, and this includes some Republicans as well as almost all the Democrats, want to get on record opposing the president's war policy. The Republicans are, on this whole issue, where the Republicans are is really very, very interesting, because the Senate has, of the senators up for re-election in 2008, 21 of them are Republicans. And the Republican senators are really worried that if there continues to be a large American troop presence in Iraq in the fall of 2008, the Democrats will substantially expand their majority in the Senate and get to a point where it will be very hard for the Republicans to come back for maybe 10 years or so.
Yeah. Senator Russ Feingold, Democrat, Wisconsin, who was unable to join us this hour, says, with the president continuing to defend a failed strategy for Iraq, Congress must use its power of the purse to safely redeploy our troops from Iraq so that we can refocus on the global terrorist threats that are not being adequately addressed right now. Your response to that?
Well, I mean, Senator Feingold and a number of his colleagues do want Congress to use its constitutional power of the purse to put restrictions on how the president can spend money in Iraq. I'm not sure yet that a majority of the House and Senate is at that point right yet. My guess is that they'll approach this in three steps. The first will be a symbolic resolution of disapproval, which will probably pass sometime in the next month to 6 weeks. Then, if there's no improvement by, say, late spring, early summer, then there might be a resolution that establishes some benchmarks or criteria that both the U.S. government and the Iraqi government need to meet. I don't think there'll be any attempt really to cut off funds for the surge, so-called, until another maybe 6 to 8 months has passed and we do have some evidence as to what exactly is happening in Iraq.
Hold on, Professor Davis. I'm happy to welcome in our first member of Congress joining us this hour, Republican U.S. Representative Tom Petri, who represents Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District, is on the phone with us right now. Good morning.
Morning, Joy.
Thank you very much for taking some time out this morning and being with us. Your reaction to the State of the Union address last night, what did you think?
Well, I thought the president did discuss a number of issues on the domestic side that it will be possible to work with the Congress on. I do think that he missed an opportunity in trying to build a consensus or at least some sort of bipartisan support on the international side by not building more on the bipartisan group's recommendations so far as Iraq was concerned. I was listening with interest to the previous speaker on your program, and I think he has it about right. There are some mechanical problems in you. Obviously, I think we all want our soldiers to receive all the support they need to operate as effectively as they can if they are committed and return home safely. And you have a difficulty between the branches. The president, any president, normally has considerable authority for moving funds around within the Defense Department and to react to changes in circumstances and the like. And so how to manage this process is a lot harder than it looks. It's not as straightforward as it ideally would be, I suppose. But that's part of the system of checks and balances and of separation of power. power that we have. This is a short-term, supposedly a build-up of 20,000 troops to operate in the Baghdad area for a period of months to stabilize it. I suspect there'll be lots of things going on during that period, and everyone hopes it will work, or nearly everyone, but the prospects, frankly, aren't very good.
Yeah, I know we only asked for a couple of minutes of your time, Representative Petri. Let me ask you about what I read here, that you say that you believe there is room to work on a bipartisan basis on a number of the initiatives outlined in the president's address, particularly
right.
in the areas of health care and energy conservation. Talk some about the energy issues that you think might be successful.
Well, the president spoke about trying to take a variety of steps to develop domestic energy and to achieve more energy security and independence. And I think there's a major effort going forward in the Congress on a fairly bipartisan basis to start taking steps to deal with carbon emissions, which everyone just about now agrees may be some factor, at least in this global warming debate. And also, of course, there are lots of interest in alternative fuels, and Congress has been working in that area, and I think will be very responsive.
We'll leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Representative Tom Petri, U.S. Republican representative from Fond du Lac, representing Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. And we'll talk with other members of Congress and our guest, Eric Davis, professor of political science at Middlebury College, in just one moment, and we'll welcome your reactions to 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. More reaction to the State of the Union coming up with Kathleen and her two guests from different perspectives after 9 o'clock. Ben Marins will also be focusing in this afternoon during At Issue with Ben Marins between 4 and 6 on some of the issues addressed in the President's State of the Union address. That's coming up all day long, for that matter, here on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Eric Davis, professor of political science at Middlebury College, and we're talking about congressional reaction, for the most part, to what the president had to say last night, and we're hearing from members of our congressional delegation. Let me take a caller or two as well. Stephen Oshkosh, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Can you review the president's comments on foreign aid and the Millennium Fund? Starting with the 2003 State of the Union address, President Bush has asked Congress to appropriate billions of dollars to the Millennium Fund, which is a foreign aid program to assist AIDS victims, people with malaria, to help people pull themselves out of poverty, etc. And I think this is one way in which Bush has actually done better than the Clinton administration.
Thank you, Steve, for posing that question. Professor Davis?
Yes. Toward the end of the speech last night, the president talked about the importance of providing international development aid, particularly for countries that have high rates of HIV/AIDS and for countries that are affected by malaria. And, again, this is an area where he may have a little bit more success with the Democratic Congress than the Republican Congress. The Republican Congress never particularly liked international development assistance programs and always spent less money than the president had proposed in his budget. And I think the Democrats are more interested in this sort of proposal and particularly may want to increase foreign aid in terms of development projects and health projects like the president talked about last night, rather than the military aid programs that have supported some governments that are certainly not democratic.
Next, we'll go to John in Highland. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is, now, he keeps bringing up change in Social Security. Now, the thing of it is we're paying more in now than they need, so they're spending it. And now, if they're going to change it, are they going to cut Social Security down payments where it's just we put in just enough to cover who's there, or are they just going to keep spending it all the time until it gets even?
Yeah.
And they say, we're broke.
Remind us what he had to say about Social Security reform.
Well, actually, the president didn't say anything specifically about Social Security last night. He did say that he wanted to get to a balanced federal budget in 5 years. And as your caller points out, one of the things that is going to help the federal budget deficit come down over the next 5 years is this be a very large Social Security surplus, which will actually run another 10 or 15 years until large numbers of baby boomers have started retiring. You might remember 2 years ago, right after he was reelected, the president used his 2005 State of the Union to talk about introducing private accounts into Social Security and said that he had political capital that he wanted to spend on that issue. Well, the president used up all his political capital on the Iraq War, and Social Security is certainly not something that he's going to be pushing. Either the president or the Democratic congressional majority will be pushing over the next 2 years.
Yeah. We will be hearing soon from U.S. Representative Gwen Moore, representing Wisconsin's 4th Congressional District. But let me play another clip from the speech last night and get our guest's response to it.
This is not the fight we entered in Iraq, but it is the fight we are in. Every one of us wishes this war were over and won. Yet it would not be like us to leave our promises unkept, our friends abandoned, and our own security at risk. Ladies and gentlemen, on this day, at this hour, it is still within our power to shape the outcome of this battle. Let us find our resolve and turn events toward victory.
Also have a statement from U.S. Representative Paul Ryan, a Republican representing Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District. He was unable to join us this hour, and he says, on Iraq and the war on terror, I agree this is the decisive ideological struggle of our time. The stakes are extraordinarily high, and we must defeat the extremists who stand against freedom and our way of life. I intend to visit Iraq in the next few weeks to see firsthand whether the proposed strategy for victory is workable. What do you think of that, Professor Davis?
Well, the most interesting line in the whole speech for me was the very first one in that clip you just played, where President Bush said about Iraq, this is not the war we entered, but it's the war we're now in. And that raises a very significant issue, which is that even if you accept that, for argument's sake, if you accept that there was a case to be made for removing Saddam Hussein back in 2003, that everything that's happened in Iraq since the end of the Saddam regime arguably has not been well handled by the American government. And this is more the sort of the political military side rather than what the troops do on the ground. This is the decisions made by Paul Bremer when he was in charge of the Coalition Provisional Authority for the first year, some of the decisions Rumsfeld made about how the U.S. and Iraqi governments would work together, the difficulties that the U.S. has had with the Maliki government. And the president did seem to admit a little bit that the political situation on Iraq today is just completely different from what he was talking about. I mean, again, if you remember going back to March of 2003, where he was talking about a wave of democracy sweeping the Middle East from Iraq, and if you read some of the speeches back from that time, you'd think that by now, almost four years after the initial military engagement, there'd be a functioning parliamentary democracy in Iraq that would be something like a Western European parliamentary system. Well, obviously, Iraq is a far distant from that.
Hold on, Professor Davis. We are welcoming in now Tammy Baldwin, Democratic U.S. Representative representing Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District. She joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for being with us. Your reaction first to what the president had to say regarding his new Iraq policy, urging you to give it a chance.
Well, he spent a lot of time in the State of the Union address on this particular subject. But my conclusion is that his renewed pitch failed to persuade anyone. And in fact, we've seen since he addressed the nation a short while ago on this proposal to escalate the war, not only stiff opposition from the vast majority of Democrats in both houses of Congress, but increasingly very notable and powerful Republicans are speaking out against this approach, too.
Yeah. Are you, Representative Baldwin, prepared to vote against this surge in a resolution?
I certainly am. Mm-hmm. I believe that this president has ignored the, you know, the will of the American people expressed through the November elections, but that we really, in representing the American people, must challenge this president, and you know, he must be accountable to someone, and I think we have to use many of the tools that are available to us as a co-equal branch of government.
What about the power of the person cutting off funding?
I think that should be on the table. I would certainly like to see you know, us start with perhaps a resolution, and you know, I think it's being considered in the Senate, perhaps first, and see if that can help persuade the president to set a new course in Iraq. But I don't think we should take any of the tools available to us off the table.
Yeah, did you like anything you heard when it came to domestic issues, Representative Baldwin?
As a matter of fact, I did. I think this might have been the first time that this president publicly uttered the words global climate change. Mm-hmm. And that is actually quite remarkable. This is a president who has, during his time in office, the White House has censored government scientists who have warned about the dangers of climate change, censored documents from EPA scientists, and you know, meddled in the work of NASA climatologists. And all of a sudden, in his seventh State of the Union address, he is acknowledging that there's a significant challenge posed by global climate change. I think that's a breakthrough, and I think that presents an opportunity for a Democratic-led House and Senate that is eager to tackle this issue to perhaps get some cooperation from the administration rather than opposition.
One more question on health care. I know that's a passion of yours. I suspect the president's proposal when it came to trying to increase health care insurance coverage didn't go far enough as far as you're concerned.
Well, by and large, he spent most of his remarks on the health care issue talking about tax policies. These are a set of policies that I do not think will be particularly helpful, and I think he fails to understand the fundamental issue faced by people who lack insurance. But he did say one thing that caught my ear and worth I'm certainly going to pursue it. He said he would be open to federal legislation that would support state innovations in providing and extending access to health care. Now, I disagreed on some of the particulars, but to me that opens a door to suggest that he's thinking in some ways along the same lines that I am, that it's going to be state innovations that lay the groundwork for bolder national reforms.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Tammy Baldwin, Democratic U.S. Representative, representing Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll hope to hear from Representative Ron Kind and Representative Gwen Moore. We're still looking around for her. Eric Davis, what about health care and what Representative Baldwin just had to say?
Well, I'd agree with what she said, that some of the states are now doing some interesting things in the area of health care, a couple of small New England states, Maine and Vermont, and more importantly, Massachusetts and California. In Massachusetts, a Republican governor, Mitt Romney, working with a Democratic legislature, put together a program that requires everybody in Massachusetts to have health insurance in a few years and provide some state subsidies to get some insurance programs in there for those who don't have it, plus a so-called pay-to-play provision that requires employers who don't offer health insurance to pay a per-employee fee to the state. And Governor Schwarzenegger, another Republican out in California, is proposing something similar. And if you start to get a number of the larger states, like Massachusetts and California, doing things at the state level on health care, that's going to start a trend that other states will pick up on and then maybe encourage Congress to start doing some things more nationally. But basically what both Massachusetts and California are talking about is to get rid of the so-called free rider phenomenon where employers can who don't offer health insurance to their workers, those workers who are uninsured, if they can't pick up insurance on their own, they end up going to the emergency room, and those costs get shifted to everybody else. And what both Romney and Schwarzenegger are saying, in effect, with their proposals is everybody has to come to the table with something, including employers.
U.S. Representative Ron Kind is on the line. He is a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks a lot for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Just give me your initial reaction to the President's State of the Union address.
Well, he had a tough task last night to try to convince a skeptical nation and a skeptical Congress that his troop surge idea this time has a chance of succeeding. And what really struck me was how tepid the response was even on the Republican side. The president's losing a lot of support for this troop surge idea. Many of us were hoping for a new direction and not an escalation. We've done troop surges 4 times in the last 3 years. None of us can understand what the president sees that makes him think this time will be different. And it's tough because there are no easy answers in Iraq right now. But last night I had as my special guest up in the gallery an infantry guardsman from Menominee who just lost his right arm due to an IED outside of Baghdad a couple of weeks ago. So I had a long, chance to talk to him about the situation on the ground. And it's heartbreaking. I mean, 18 military funerals in my congressional district alone. We've had 24,000 injured troops come home and over 3,000 deaths so far. And our troops are being asked to babysit a civil war right now. And even worse, to start picking sides in a civil war. And I don't like the fact the focus is so much on the United States, whether we succeed or fail, when the onus and responsibility has to be placed on the Iraqi people to determine what type of future they're going to create for themselves. And the military advisors keep telling us, we are not going to accomplish this militarily, but only through political compromises that only the Iraqis can make. So it was a tough sell, and I think it was a very difficult task to overcome for the president.
Yeah. On the domestic side, anything there that caught your ear?
Well, I think 2 things really jumped out on his energy proposals. First, he was talking about mandatory goals. He's never used the word mandatory when it comes to alternative and renewable energy sources. And then he talked about increasing CAFE standards, fuel efficiency standards, and he's never gone there before. And for the first time, he uttered out of his own mouth global climate change. He's never publicly acknowledged global climate change or global warming before, and yet last night they worked it into the speech. So I think it's an indication that the administration's finally waking up and realizing we've got a serious problem on our hands, and it's going to take the ingenuity of the American people to figure this out. But we need to start challenging one another on how to figure this out sooner rather than later. So I was hopeful in that regard, and I think there can be some areas that we can reach agreement on domestically. Certainly the rising cost of health care is going to be a huge issue, and we need more details of the president's plan. We have some huge issues coming up with reauthorization of No Child Left Behind and the higher education bill. But the one thing that I was hoping he would at least had one line to talk about was our family farmers and the farm bill that's coming up for reauthorization. But yet again, there was no mention about the biggest investment that we make in rural America with this farm bill during his speech.
Yeah, he did mention ethanol, though. Did you like that?
Yeah, he did. And I appreciate that the president works hard to understand this issue, and I think he does understand it, that somehow we need to try to leapfrog over the corn and bean production of ethanol and try to get to cellulosic as quickly as possible. And he's concerned about a lot of sensitive lands, as I am, being brought back into production. The huge increase in corn and bean prices on the market today and the effect that's going to have on our cattle, poultry industry, feed and food costs are going up as a consequence, too. So the president, I think, has been spending a lot of time thinking through this energy equation, and there's no question that we need a new energy policy for a new century that weans ourselves off from this dependence on foreign oil.
We'll leave it there for now. Representative Kind, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Joy.
Ron Kind, representing Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, getting State of the Union response from many of our U.S. representatives in Congress representing Wisconsin, and also from our guest who's been with us all hour long, Eric Davis, professor of political science at Middlebury College. We are happy to have with us now Gwen Moore, who is a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 4th Congressional District. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thanks again for being with us.
Oh, great being with you all.
So your reaction, what did you think of what the president said last night?
Well, I can tell you, there were many highs and lots and lots of lows. I thought the president, I think it was really a touching thing to have so many heroes there the Subway Superman, for example, generated the president a lot of applause, and of course our soldiers and others. I think that was a high point of his presentation. I do think that he sandwiched in between that some really suspect domestic policy. He talked, for example, about No Child Left Behind, and he spent a lot of time talking about closing the achievement gap, something we all agree upon, about the need to maintain standards. But he didn't mention the need to fully fund No Child Left Behind, which is one of the main criticisms of the program.
Yeah. He also kind of pushed school vouchers more. What did you think of that?
I thought I clearly heard that in his remarks, saying that we ought to allow kids to go to schools, you know, where they can achieve. Again, he talked about health care, and it's sort of hard, Joy, to not get extremely excited when you hear any kind of proposal that that seeks to address the problem of the 46 million Americans who have no health insurance. But then when you listened a little bit more closely, it was cynical, I thought, for him to say that he's going to so-called level the playing field by taxing those people who've been fortunate enough to have good health insurance coverage from their employers. We heard basically the whole health savings account and helping people through the tax code with tax deductions. Well, tax deductions really will not help and help those struggling uninsured people who are cobbling together two or three salaries in order to make ends meet. And they've got to pay health care costs up front and then depend on getting a refund through the tax code if they have tax liability. So I was disappointed that his health care proposal was not more realistic. And, of course, it was exciting to hear him talk about the need for energy and independence. To really acknowledge that global warming was real and not just some left-wing conspiracy. But I am concerned about whether or not he wants to cultivate alternative fuels more than just ethanol, or whether or not he could bring the Republican Congress, even though they're not in the majority, anymore, if he can bring them along with his plans, because they've been in the majority all this time, and they haven't done anything except provide big tax breaks to big oil companies. So it's going to be very interesting to see how what sort of proposals he brings forth that are environmentally responsible and environmentally friendly, as well as being committed to the range of alternative fuels that we need.
Yeah,
On Iraq, you know, it's like business as usual.
He didn't change your mind on that.
I mean, my God, he just completely has dismissed the opinions of, I guess at this point, fired military leaders. The recommendation of the Iraq Study Group, which he found interesting. The will of the American people, I guess we're just some pollsters, out there and not real folk. And, you know, the administration is still on his going along.
So, Representative
strategy.
Moore, do you think the Democrats in Congress are going to exhibit any kind of authority here and cut off funding, or what do you think is going to happen when it comes to?
Well, here's the thing. There's a lot of debate going on here in the House, and I expect over in the Senate about exactly how to communicate to the president that we really mean what we say. I know that there's non-binding resolutions, non-binding, that are coming out to state unequivocally that we are not for this escalation. Now, beyond that point, what I am hoping is that given the Democratic majority, we are able to divide the question in terms of how the money is packaged. So many times I have not been able to vote for or against initiatives because the Republican majority sort of globs everything together. I voted for one supplemental, for example, because it had money in there that was desperately needed for Darfur, you know, or money for Katrina, globbed in with must-pass military budget. So hopefully the power of the purse will start by separating out and teasing out monies that are going to be used to make sure that our soldiers who are have already been deployed to Afghanistan and Iraq are protected, that they have the right equipment, that they have what they need, and those dollars, which would be for an escalation, to be isolated in another package, so that we can have a clear, clean, up and down vote on that, those kinds of funds. I think that there's a triangulation strategy that the administration has. You heard it last night in a speech, where if you support the troops, then you've got to somehow agree with my escalation. And that is absolutely not the case.
And we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for your time this
morning.
Thanks
for having me.
Representative Gwen Moore, Democrat representing Wisconsin's 4th Congressional District. And if Eric Davis hasn't left us, he's...
I'm still here.
So thank you so much for standing by as we get reaction from our congressional delegation. You know, we didn't talk a lot about the education stuff, and Gwen Moore just talked about that. She represents the Milwaukee area. You want to talk about what he had to say about No Child Left Behind
education? Yes. No Child Left Behind comes up for renewal this year, and I think Representative Moore identified what one of the major issues on Capitol Hill will be, which is the funding. There have been complaints from a lot of state and local education officials that the Republican Congress did not adequately fund No Child Left Behind. These people who are sort of in the trenches in education, they like the idea of standards, they like the idea of setting goals, they like the idea of accountability, but in order to do this, it does require more money for things like reducing class sizes, buying new teaching materials, and that sort of thing. And I think there's going to be a big push from the Democrats in the Congress and from the governors and other people in the states as well as local for Congress to step up to the plate and fully fund No Child Left Behind when it comes up for renewal. The same thing with special education. Special education costs for many school districts are one of the most rapidly growing parts of their budget. The federal government has all sort of mandates in terms of the education of children with disabilities of various types, whether they're learning disabilities or physical disabilities. And again, the Congress has not fully funded the national goals in special education. So that's where I think the big issue on education will be this year, the funding.
And one more time, Eric Davis, hold on as we get another one of our congressional delegation on the air with us. Very happy to have with us Democratic U.S. Representative representing Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District, Steve Kagan from Appleton. He joins us by telephone. And I understand, Representative Kagan, you're joining us from a special brunch going on right now with House Speaker Pelosi.
Madam Speaker's in the other room, and we're having a great conversation about the future of this country.
Well, thank you very much for taking a couple of minutes out from that. Well, what did you think of what the president had to say last night? What did maybe start with, did you like anything he had to say last night?
Well, I think the president should be commended for at least addressing our health care crisis, but his proposal really raises taxes for the people that can afford at least, and that is working families. So I'm opposed to a tax hike on working families who can't afford already these sky-high insurance premiums. I think what we really need to do is establish an open and transparent medical marketplace and guarantee that you and I can get the same discount as the veterans do for their prescriptions.
Yeah. So you don't think his health care reform ideas are going to do the job?
Well, over 50% of those people who do not have insurance today pay no income taxes. So his proposal completely misses them altogether.
Yeah. What did you have to, what else about what the president had to say last night, perhaps what he had to say about Iraq? Did that change your mind in any way?
Not at all. I'm opposed to any escalation of violence in Iraq by putting more troops into the confrontation. It's not going to decrease the risk. It's going to increase the risk for not just our own soldiers, but for everyone on the ground. Everyone that I speak with, everyone in my district understands the Iraqi people don't want us there. Kuwaitis don't want us in Kuwait, and we just don't belong over there in the middle of a Sunni and Shiite civil war.
Yeah. I'll let you get back to the brunch, and we appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for being with us.
Steve, you too.
Steve Kagan, Democrat representing Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District. And Professor Davis, want to talk a little bit more about the health care stuff?
Yeah, on the health care thing, presidents, as several of the members have pointed out, is proposing using the tax system to try and provide some incentives to get individuals who don't have health insurance to be able to buy it by getting some tax deductions, and also to put a cap on the amount that can be paid in tax-free compensation for medical insurance. I think the difficulty with that proposal is it assumes that there really is that health care, in a sense, is a product that consumers buy like they would buy an automobile or like they would buy some furniture for their houses or something like that. And I'm just not sure whether Americans think in those terms, whether, you know, if you're seriously ill, do you go to Dr. A rather than Dr. B because Dr. A charges $1,000 less for a particular type of surgery? I just don't think that's the way that most Americans think about health care. And as the last member pointed out, the people with lower incomes, who are often in part-time jobs, the ones who tend not to get health insurance through their employer, many of those people, their incomes are low enough that they're not paying any federal income tax in any case, so a tax deduction isn't going to be of any benefit to those people.
Yeah. I'm going to take one call from Ed in West Allis. Hi, Ed, you're on the air.
To those who are given much, much is expected. I wonder if anyone in the country listening to the speech last night wondered to whom those words were being directed and whether or not Mr. Bush was directing them back at himself. How would you like to be the parent of a soldier from Middle Ridge, Wisconsin, or Milwaukee, realizing that you might be the last one to die in a failed war? And what about the 83,000 United Automobile workers?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Ed. You're going farther than I thought you were going to go, and we're almost out of time. And I have U.S. Senator Herb Kohl on the line as well. So we'll get reaction to what you had to say after we talk with Senator Kohl. Good morning.
Hello, how are you doing?
Thank you very much for being with us.
All right.
Did you? What did you think of the State of the Union address last night?
It was a good speech, and you know, certainly all of us here in Washington who work with the White House and work with each other in Congress are looking for ways to get things done. And, you know, as everybody knows, we have a divided government right now, which is not a bad thing. You know, Congress is controlled by Democrats and, of course, the White House by Republicans. But that kind of interaction, as we found the lack of it for the last several years when it was all controlled by one party, the lack of interaction is not a good thing. And the fact that we'll have interaction over these next several years is a good thing. What we need to do is find common ground on issues that are important to our country.
Yeah.
Things like, you know, energy independence is extremely important, conservation. Climate change, the president talked about that just briefly, but it's enormously important. Healthcare issues, providing health care for people all across this country, which the president at least addressed. Education is extremely important. These are domestic issues that we hopefully will be able to find some common ground on. Frankly, the difficulty up to now has been that for the most part, the administration has had their own ideas and really hasn't consulted with Congress, and as a result, not much has gotten done. So while he did address these domestic issues, which are important to people every day in their lives, we'll have to see whether or not behind it is a real willingness to cooperate, to compromise, to iron out our differences so that at the end of the day, the American people can feel a sense of progress in addressing the issues that are really important to them. But it was a first step, and, you know, I'm not one to criticize right out of the box because that's not the way in which you get things done.
Yeah.
You have to wait to see whether or not there's some meat there behind, you know, behind the words that you always see in a State of the Union. So on a domestic level, I prefer to be hopeful, and I prefer to hope that we can come together and find ways in which we can do things that help people who are getting up every day and working hard for a living.
Yeah. And Senator Cole, do you see any common ground when it comes to the issue of Iraq and the escalation of troops?
That's much more difficult. Iraq is, you know, it's become a real, real thorny issue, a problem in many ways tragic for people all across our state and all across our country. You know, the vote last November was really a referendum more than anything else on the president's Iraq policy, which, for the most part, at least up to now, has been a failed policy, a failed strategy, and has caused so much tragedy everywhere, here in our country and all around the world. And the American people voted for change. They didn't vote for escalation. They voted for the beginning of a policy that would get us out of Iraq and bring our troops home. And instead of going down that road, the president has decided to escalate and, you know, spend more money and send 21,000 more troops. And, there's genuine disagreement between him and a bipartisan group in the Congress, not just Democrats, but Republicans also. I would expect in the next week or so we're going to see some votes on a resolution here in the Senate that will have support from both Democrats and Republicans voicing strong disagreement with the president's policy.
And we'll leave it there. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us.
All right.
Senator Herb Cole, U.S. Senator, Democrat, representing Wisconsin. And in our last minute, to Eric Davis, and I thank you so much for being with us, your conclusions, where we go from here.
Well, my conclusion, listening to several of these members talking about Iraq, is I think Congress is going to be pursuing a two-track strategy regarding the war. That, as Senator Cole said, the Senate will likely start the process of passing a resolution of disapproval within the next week or so. But listening to some of the House members, I think they're really engaged in intensive discussions among themselves, trying to figure out after that what is the best way of getting the message through to the president. Does it involve benchmarks? Does it involve using the power of the purse? Does it mean having separate votes and targeted money for escalation, as Representative
Davis,
Moore said?
Thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Eric Davis, Professor of Political Science. And thanks to Leo Duran and Cheryl Gasser for producing all morning long. This is the Ideas Network.